back to when you were 12 years old. Were you trying to figure out if your crush likes you back? Or were you like Hazel, who was worried about whether there'd be gunfights outside her apartment and a mom who constantly was worried about keeping her safe?
Because my mom didn't let me go out at night or even after school. Instead of going to school, I would leave with my friends and go to their houses and listen to records, go to the beach, have ditching parties where like 20 to 40 kids go to somebody's apartment while both the parents were working. I did that all the time, so much so that I didn't finish high school. I was short my credits. And my mom really didn't monitor me. I think she thought that only the bad things happened at night.
That's right. Hazel grew up in poverty. In a gang-infested neighborhood in LA, to be exact. Yet, despite experiencing trauma like seeing her best friend being killed at a bus stop at 12 years old, she went on to graduate high school, even if it was at 30 years old, and became a multi-million dollar business owner. Sure, she worked hard, but she also credits both luck and a number of miracles to help her escape the cycle of poverty. So, what were they? Guess you kind of keep listening to find out. Welcome to Beyond the Dollar with me, Sarah Lee Kane, a show where we have deep and honest conversations about how money affects our well-being. Hazel Ortega, serial entrepreneur and author of From Bounce Checks to Private Jets, comes on the show to talk about growing up in poverty and the messages she received growing up about money. Plus, she reveals the people and miracles in her life, which led her to graduating college, growing a wildly successful business, and so much more. Before we start, I want you to know that there are no cut and dry answers when it comes to money management. That's why it's important for you to dial in on your values and use that as your guide. I have a free values-based spending guide that walks you through some juicy questions and how you can start using them to allocate your money. To grab it, head over to beyondthedollar.co/values. All right, get ready, grab a seat, and let's go beyond the dollar. Okay, so let's start off with how you grew up as a kid and one of the most significant memories you have as you were growing up.
I grew up on welfare in a poor neighborhood of downtown Los Angeles, and both my parents were undocumented immigrants from Mexico. By the time I was born, my parents were already separated. I do have a lot of experiences of my mom getting divorced and remarrying again and divorced again and then having children with different husbands and each time breaking my heart, because when we're kids, we just love. We don't discriminate. That is one of the things that stood out the most growing up, not feeling worthy, not feeling like I deserved and that I mattered. A lot of the decisions in my life were based on that belief, even though it was a subconscious belief. Also, growing up in that neighborhood, we had to deal with drive-by shootings because it was a gang-infested neighborhood. One of my best friends was killed at the bus stop, and he was only 12 years old. Later, I've had other friends who were stabbed, shot, beat up, gone to prison, high school dropouts, teen pregnancy, all of the things that plague poor neighborhoods. My mom, she tried her best to keep us safe from the streets. It seemed like that was her number one priority versus for us to have a quality education and for us to go to college and have a career and a different future. She was just trying to help us survive and make it out of that neighborhood without falling prey to what she saw all around with the teen pregnancy and the death in prison. So that was also something that sticks out to me still. When the phone rings in the middle of the night or unexpectedly, I think somebody's calling me because something really bad happened. It's never like, oh, what a great surprise. It's always like, oh, Lord, what happened? Sort of like a PTSD. And then also growing up, I never saw my mom go to the bank and I never saw her write a check, use an ATM machine. She primarily went to check cashing places to cash her welfare check. And we used food stamps at the market. Being poor makes you very resourceful. And I feel like I learned my entrepreneur skills from a very young age. I saw my mom hustle, buying used things and then flipping them for more money, lending somebody $20 and expecting $25 back. I was a witness to my mom in all her transactions. I would go and collect money for her. So that was something also that I carried over into my adult life. Even though my first part of my adult life, I had jobs, in each job that I had, I was very present to entrepreneurship, and I tried to contribute as much to the businesses that I worked for and help make revenue. I knew what that was all about. I planned the future, like certain clients want to leave the attorney's office, and I knew that that meant that we were not going to get paid 2 months down the line if that client left. So I was always very mindful of the enterprise.
That's interesting. Do you feel like the entrepreneur side really came about as a side effect of needing to survive in that environment growing up?
Most definitely. When you grow up in a poor neighborhood, you're always trying to figure out how to survive and then how to have the outcome that will keep you safe. So that kind of thinking is transferable. So the hustle is real. If my mom didn't turn her $300 a month she got from welfare into a little bit more money, there wasn't enough money to feed five daughters. She was a single mom most of the time. So she was trying to make ends meet. And yeah, definitely that hustle is transferable.
For sure. I mean, look where you are now, right? So what really struck me when you mentioned your mom's pride is really keeping you safe versus maybe the value of getting a good education and using that to further your situation. So what were some of the things that she would say or do that really hit home for you?
My mom had a lot of domestic violence experience in all her marriages. Eventually, my mom ended up shooting and killing one of her boyfriends who tried to hit her while she was pregnant. She would give us the advice, but really not use it for herself, which is ironic. Growing up, she would tell us, don't let anybody hit you. You're so important. You're so valuable. Don't let anybody harm, not even one hair on your head. Whatever you have to do to get away from a situation like that, do it. You could fake fainting. You could kill them with kindness and compliments, even if they're coming at you. Because in my neighborhood, it was either they want to fight with you because of gangs, or they want to fight with you because you're looking at them in a certain way. People are always like, what are you looking at? A look can really get you killed. I had a lot of people want to fight with me just because they thought I was mad dogging them or looking at them in a judgmental way. Usually you're looking at people and assessing if you should run. So yeah, my mom used to tell me that, to avoid confrontation as much as possible. Stay safe, stay with my friends. She would tell me that I could marry anybody that I wanted, that I was important and I was valuable, that I could grow up, get married, have a nice home and nice children. I had no other person telling me that I could go to college. It seemed like all my friends were dropping out of school and not finishing, and I didn't finish high school either. The other things that my mom did tell us about did resonate with me and all my sisters. She told all of us the same thing about how important we were. And we did all grow up to become bosses in our jobs, where we're all supervisors and managers. I'm the one that became the entrepreneur.
That's amazing. So you didn't graduate high school. Was that by choice? Was that, would you say, like a product of the environment that you were growing up at the time?
It was a product of the environment. My mom didn't let us, because it was so dangerous, my mom didn't let us hang out with our friends at night. And so kids, no matter where you live and what economical status you have, you all want to be with friends. And nothing's going to stop that, because my mom didn't let me go out at night or even after school. Instead of going to school, I would leave with my friends and go to their houses and listen to records, go to the beach on the bus, go to the park, have ditching parties where like 20 to 40 kids can go to somebody's apartment while both the parents were working. We'd hang out really innocent. There'd be maybe some drinking, but nothing out of control. And hang out with the local gang members, the cool kids. I did that all the time, so much so that I didn't finish high school. I was short my credits. And my mom really didn't monitor me in that sense about like what I was doing during the day. I think she thought that only the bad things happened at night.
Right. Of course. That's interesting. I am curious. So at that point, how did you view money? I get the sense of you need it to survive, but was there other viewpoints that you had about money at that time?
As a kid, just not having enough money was prevalent. When I was in high school, I, even though I didn't graduate, I still had all my friends were my age. So they were going to the prom, to grad night, all those things that we didn't have money for. I took time off from school 2 weeks straight and worked at a warehouse putting price tags on clothes. And then with that money, buying my prom dress and buying my prom tickets. I really thought I was destined for a life of financial struggle. And I'm sure the rest of my family also felt the same way. Like, that's just the way it is. We're poor. The only rich people we knew were the people that we saw on television. We didn't know anyone that had a swimming pool. I never went to anybody's house that was actually a house and not an apartment. But it was just like something like a default. We're born poor. We're going to die poor. Statistically, 60% of people that are born in poverty die in poverty. That's just because it's like surviving low expectations, right? Nobody expected me to be successful. And my friends were in the same situation. So how can you expect that one other person can do it? You don't even think it's possible.
I'm glad you brought up the statistic because it is very powerful and also upsetting at the same time, if you think about it, because I'm just going to make an assumption, or people tend to assume like, oh, it's the US, it's America, it's a land of opportunity. There's got to be a way for people to just take advantage of those and move away from their situation. And many of the time, if everybody around you is doing something, then how can you imagine something else, which is sad, unfortunately. So what I'm really interested in is, I mean, obviously there's quite a long time in between expecting that, oh, I'm just going to die poor to where you are now. So when you were 18 or 19, I think you moved out at that point. So what had happened then? Was there any situations or incidences where you realized, okay, maybe I can have more?
Sarah, I want to tell you that people ask me all the time and they make the assumption that because I have such a challenging childhood that anybody can make it. They're like, well, if you did it, then nobody has an excuse. Everybody can get out of the ghetto. And in reality, that is not the truth because I had a certain set of circumstances that probably other people didn't have. I'll tell you, my dad was a heroin addict and he never remarried and never had any children after my mom and him broke up. He was only 18 years old when that happened. He was in and out of jail my entire childhood, doing stints like 2 years coming out, 6 months coming out, and 5 years coming out, you know, in and out, in and out. But my dad, the entire time, wrote to me. And whenever he was having a release date, I knew to expect him to come and see me, and he would. So having just even the perception of being loved, that makes a difference also. And then the conversations that my mom had with me about that I matter, those things are conversations that I'm not sure all my friends had that from their parents. It was a kind of a unique conversation that both my parents helped to shape me. Also, I came across mentors. At 18 years old, I applied for the Joint Training Partnership Act, and I got a job. And I did it to get credits, hoping that I could maybe graduate from high school. So I was trying to go to Saturday school, night school, and get credits. And that's where I met my first mentor. She was a judge at a workers' compensation appeals board. She started asking me, what am I going to do after high school? What college? All these things. I ended up telling her, I don't even think I'm going to finish high school. She was very interested in me graduating and telling me that it was very important to at least complete that. I focused on that and I tried my best to graduate. In the end, I couldn't make up all of those credits. One teacher even said, you're not going to miss half the year and think you're going to pass my class, you know? So there were things that came into my life that changed the trajectory of my life. In number one, I really believe it's mentors. So I had the judge, and then the judge recommended me to get a job at a lawyer's office after I aged out of that program. And the attorney that hired me was the first Hispanic attorney I had ever seen in my life. I'd never seen a Latino that looked like me, that I could identify with, that was a professional and successful. That also changed my life. He was encouraging me also to get my college education and supported me throughout my whole entire career of going back to school, my educational career. I went back to school. I got my high school diploma at 30 years old. And then at that point, I already had 3 kids at home and a husband. I saw education at that point as the way out of poverty. It's almost like we're always trying to figure out how we're going to get out of poverty, at least for myself. How was I going to get out of poverty? How was I going to pay my bills, buy my first home, have a nice car? So I kept going and I ended up becoming a psychologist. And that's what I thought was going to get me out of poverty, right? But my job the first year was a non-paid internship. I needed to make money since I couldn't have my other job because I had to do this full-time internship. I started my first business from my garage. I had a business partner who ran it while I was doing my internship. Then when I was pretty much almost done with my internship, I was working as a school psychologist at South Pasadena Unified School District, which is a school district for the affluent people like doctors and lawyers and business owners. And I was giving therapy to their kids, and their kids were fainting, drinking, having sex, and ditching school. And they would send them to my office for triage, you know, trying to like figuring out why these kids were doing these things. It turns out that most of these kids thought that their parents were so busy, they weren't paying attention to them. I thought to myself, wow, my own kids are going to be like these kids if I continued doing this job, because the job required me to work from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. But then I would go home and have to write 20-page reports. That made me focus more on the business that I started on the side. And eventually, when that business became profitable, I left the profession of school psychology to start a vocational counseling for injured workers business. From then on, that's all that we've done. I've had other businesses, but that is primarily my passion, is to help people change their lives. So through education, I was able to change my own life and get myself out of poverty. Now that's what I teach other people to do, is to go back to school and change the trajectory of their own lives after a work-related injury.
I love what you said about the set of circumstances, and you're absolutely right with that. We would like to think that, oh, if this person can do it, I can do it too. It's unfortunately not always the case. I think when you're talking about you had that perception of being loved, I remember interviewing so many other stories that are similar to yours in terms of getting out of poverty. And that was really the one key thing that people would mention, was like there was someone that actually believed that I could do more and be more. And so I think that's a really powerful statement that you just said there. You mentioned mentors and how they were essentially advocating for you to do better as well. And so was it because of them that you viewed education as this really important piece to getting out of poverty?
That one was in front of me, right? That was my environment. If I had been around entrepreneurs, maybe I would have seen entrepreneurship as a way out of poverty. Even though I tell you that there's a set of circumstances that helped me out, that probably most people don't get these circumstances happen for them. Like, you can call it luck, but you could create your own circumstances. Right now, I still seek out mentors, and my mentor doesn't necessarily need to be physically here. Like Oprah Winfrey is one of my mentors. Jennifer Lopez is another mentor, and then Jesus Christ. And then I also mentor other people, and people ask me if I could mentor them. So you could find your own mentors if you know you're missing that in your life and you don't have somebody really looking at your greatness and calling you out with that. You need to seek that out.
How would you do that? Like, yeah, sure, I can watch a lot of episodes of Oprah Winfrey. It's pretty accessible. But let's say I am really interested in becoming a lawyer, for example, and nobody around me is a lawyer. I'm not really sure where to even begin to find someone who works in that field to help me figure out what type of education I need or internships. Like, where would I go look?
On social media, you can start a Facebook group. And you can ask, you can even post on Facebook, like, I'm looking to become a lawyer and I need to find out how I can go about doing that. Do you know anybody that can connect me to a lawyer so I can ask questions? You can interview 5 lawyers. And then before you know it, one of those is going to be your mentor. But the most important part about what you just said right now that I really like is you need to know where you're heading, right? Your vision, your dream. So becoming a lawyer becomes the dream, right? And then you create a vision for it. And your vision is your desire, and your desires pull everything towards you. So you become a magnet for everything that you want lawyer related. It's not as hard as it may seem. The hardest part is saying that you want to do that.
I am in 100% agreement with you. And I think when I mention that to people, their first response is, I don't know what I want. Like, how do I figure that out? And so if someone were to come to you and say, well, I don't know what I want, then how am I supposed to start attracting all these opportunities? What do you say to them?
People always ask me, so education got you as successful as you are right now. It got you there. It was the vehicle. It's like, education was one of the ways that I got to where I'm at. But in reality, when I became a psychologist at 36 years old, I was still fist fighting with my sisters and I was still bouncing checks. I still had my old patterns of not knowing how to balance my checkbook, not having a real consciousness of how I was spending my money. I didn't save any money until I turned 40 years old. What really changed my life and had me have a transformation is creating a vision for something that I thought wasn't even possible. What I do is I have a technology that I always share with people that I feel was the point that had my life do a 180, and my life is now unrecognizable because of that. What it is that I intentionally did an exercise where they prompted me to look at my life 5 years from now. And every area of my life that mattered the most, which would be my career, my finances, my family, my love, and my lifestyle. Like, what would that look like in 5 years? Most people will tell you what it's going to look like in 5 years based on what it looks like right now. So if I have a job, I know that in 5 years from now, I probably can get a promotion. I could probably get a 3% raise. Maybe I'll be making $10,000 more a year. That's how they dream within their means. And that's what I did as well. I used to do that until I couldn't create a vision for my life in 5 years that was very different than the life I was already living. And I was like, I need to create a big vision here. And what is missing? What am I not putting in? And I sat there until I realized I'm not adding God into this. I'm not adding miracles into this. If God is real and I believe in miracles, then what life could I have in 5 years? So I created that in 5 years, I was going to have $3 million or more. I was going to have the love of my life. I was going to have relationships with my sisters that looked like we were in heaven. I was going to live in a pimp daddy mansion, the kind where music videos are filmed. And I was going to have an extraordinary life and travel in private jets. That is what I wrote when I was making maybe $70,000 a year in my business. There was no reason why I created that vision, because there was no proof at the moment that that could happen. It was aligning myself with miracles, right? There's no explaining a miracle. The minute that you explain a miracle, it ceases to be a miracle. If there's no thing that I have to do, no different way I have to be, then what is possible if everything is already inside of me? If I start with that, I was able to create a big vision. Before that, I was stuck. I couldn't believe that there really was a thing of like the love of your life. I never saw an example of that. All I saw was struggle. Even in long-lasting marriages, all I saw was arguments and struggle and people not happy. People mostly fighting over money and barely making it. I didn't believe that you could have the love of your life. I did believe you could get married and have children as a necessity of human evolution, but not because it's for fulfillment and happiness. So for me to even say that I wanted to have the love of my life was a real stretch. And in 2 years, I had it all for no particular reason. I didn't have to get another college degree or spend a lot of money or sacrifice a lot. It happened. I attracted it. And that can happen to anybody. The most important thing is creating a vision for what you want in your life, even if you have to fake it. But it has to be your own vision, not something that you just want to do because other people are doing it and how cool that is. I still create my vision right now, even though I've already reached all of those goals. I'm alive and I'm young and there's still so much more to do. And now my vision is about creating a difference in the world for 1 billion girls and women, getting women out of poverty through education, because education is the catalyst that got me out of where I was. And education being like reading. If you're tired of being broke, read a book, read The Millionaire Next Door. There's so many things in there that are aha moments. Even my own book is a great book to read about getting out of poverty and challenges. You learn just taking action, doing things, changing your mindset. All of these things require exercises, doing things. You can't just sit there and sulk and think things are going to change. They're not. You have to change your patterns, and then that's going to change your life.
And that's really powerful. I get asked a lot. It's like, oh, how do you do this? Or how does this happen? And I could ask the same of you, but I get the sense it's more the idea of you just got to have that almost like a confirmation bias. Like, if this is what I want, I'm going to declare it. And somehow I'm going to be able to spot those opportunities for me to take, in a sense. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, people always ask me, because I've had nearly a dozen businesses, and people always ask me, how do you find these businesses? How do you seek them out? I don't seek them out. I attract them. I don't go out and look for the number one best restaurant in Los Angeles. That opportunity came to me. They found me. Right now, I'm in another business. They found me. I just worry about creating the vision that I want for my life, which is making an impact in the world and helping people at a higher level. So you just need to worry about what impact you want to have in the world, what lifestyle you want to live, what legacy you want to give your children, what's your highest vision for your life, what is your life purpose. Just think about yourself and create that vision, and it'll all be attracted to you. All of the opportunities, phone calls, things that you would think would take a miracle, they happen. You would get a phone call that some celebrity wants to interview you and have you on television.
So I'm curious about your relationship with your sisters. Is it still pretty good now?
We've come a long way from the little girls that grew up in a bad neighborhood and had to fight over everything. I mean, we fought over the food, we fought over clothes, we fought over friends and over gangs. We even fought over Michael Jackson being a better performer than Boy George. we fought over my mom's attention, all of these things. And that changed. And it was really interesting because I used to try to change them. What I realized was I had to change myself. When I changed myself, everything changed. Because I was no longer trying to win a conversation. I was no longer having this syndrome with my older sister where I felt that she didn't love me and I had to fight for her love, which are all the underlying things of the fighting. But we didn't know it. We were blind to it. As I started working on myself through personal development and knowing myself, I realized my own insanity. I have 6 brothers and sisters. We've been through a lot of trauma. So we have a lot of deep rooted hurts. And they manifest themselves when we're hanging out at family parties. One conversation can hurt another person. So I already learned how to better navigate my family. And so we get along great. I just saw them this weekend and I sat there and just thinking like how much I love them. It just made me feel so happy. Yeah, so things have definitely changed. I feel, again, it's because I created that vision of what it would look like if my sisters and I were in heaven and there was nothing between us, like no hurts, no past traumas. How would we get along? And I designed that future and then I lived into it. It's remarkable. You can have everything that you want. You just have to create it in your mind. Our brain is meant to keep us safe. So if you are trying to be rational, and tell your brain, oh, from now on, I'm going to get along with my sister. Your brain is going to be like, oh, yeah, right. Your sister who wants to kill you, who can't stand you, who already told everyone that you're dead to her. Like, how are you going to do that? That's never going to happen. It almost feels like a clear and present danger. Like you could die if you even reached out to your sister and she rejected you. So you have to tell your brain like it already happened. You have to create the vision as if it is going to happen in 5 years from now or even 1 year from now or next month. Or tomorrow. And you have to pretend like it already happened. Then your brain will allow you to see it. And if your brain can see it, then you could attract that. That's what I did. And everything seemed to turn out exactly, if not better, than I could have imagined it. Really, it's a complete miracle.
I know you said you're always creating a vision. I know one of them is to help girls in poverty escape the cycle. Can you share with us some other things that you're envisioning for your 5-year or your new 5-year plan?
Yes. Well, I'm coming up with a second book and I've been speaking not only on podcasts, but also I'm in book clubs all over the world. I've been invited to Brazil, Argentina and Mexico, Colombia also. And I'm participating right now with the United Nations and have that conversation about responsibility within our own companies as entrepreneurs and how the sustainable development goals are not goals for other countries and other third world places. Actually, they're here right now. Gender equality and equal pay and quality education, those are things that we are challenged with here presently in the United States. So that's something that I'm participating in. I also have my vision planned out all the way until I'm 95 years old.
Well, Hazel, thank you so much for coming on Beyond the Dollar.
Thank you, Sarah, for inviting me. It's a great pleasure to be here.
You can check out Hazel's book, Mastery of Miracles, From Bounce Checks to Private Jets, at Amazon. And you can visit her at masteryofmiracles.com, where you can download her exercise, where she walks you through the next 5 years on how to create your own vision for your life. Coming up next, I distill some takeaways from our conversation, including how you're both a product and not a product of the environment you grew up in, and how that can affect or change your financial situation. Hey everyone, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Hazel. There was so much more we could have talked about. Her book was such an intense read, so I highly recommend it if you're looking for a new book to read. Before we go into some of the research that I found, I just want to say about the statistic that Hazel talks about, the 60% of children who are in poverty don't get out of poverty. I couldn't find any really definitive research on that. That's not to say it isn't true. I will update the show notes if I do find something like that. But the truth is that most children in poverty don't necessarily escape poverty. They're still kind of in that cycle of poverty and then generations after that. So that being said, I do want to talk a little bit about children in poverty and breaking the cycle and all those things, because we in general really want to be able to think that we can have our own personal agency and kind of move out of these situations. And I'm not saying that's not true, but the truth is they are shaped, your situation, sorry, is shaped by the environment that you grew up in. And so as you heard with my conversation with Hazel, a lot of things that she believed to be true about money, even her lack of priority in terms of her education was very prevalent, right? She ditched with 20 to 40 kids and would go to the beach and the park and all of these things, right? Her mother wasn't necessarily monitoring her except for making sure that she was safe from these gangs in her neighborhood, right? Teenage pregnancy, all of those things. Those are very real threats. And so it's not to say what's right or wrong or what the mom did was right or wrong. It's really that, again, the environment can shape in terms of what is important to you, what your views are, and really that belief in terms of where can you go in life or what can you do to survive in life. And so I've never been in poverty and I don't even want to assume what it's going to like. I'm just going to say I can imagine that if you're trying to hustle for like a couple of bucks here and there or trying to get food, that is much more priority than getting an A in school, right? Much more priority than figure out what college am I going to get in, what degree I'm going to do, and maybe your outfit for school, those things like that. So I'm going to draw from some research from the Urban Institute's Child Poverty and Adult Success Study report just to kind of give some perspective in terms of what someone in poverty might be experiencing. So the grim statistic is that one in every five children, they're currently living in poverty, and nearly twice as many will experience poverty at some point during their childhood. So the Urban Institute's report talks about children who are continually in poverty or were considered poor at one point of their life and then kind of get out, right? And so the idea here is the longer that a child is in poverty or living in poverty, the more likely that they are going to not have higher educational achievement in terms of like graduating high school, getting a community college or even a college degree. And then, of course, as a result, they may have employment that's going to reflect the lower pay and all of that. Of course, these types of children who are continually in a cycle of poverty are more likely to have a child in their teenage years and even be more involved with the criminal justice system. And so again, you know, maybe we can assume that because these children are in poverty, there's almost this kind of survival instinct that really kicks in, or you think you got to do what you got to do to survive, right? It's like, okay, I got to steal money. I got to deal drugs. I got to do these things to do it. And maybe their parents were not around, or maybe it's one of those things where their parents may or may not have encouraged it because, again, the survival thing, right? Again, no shame, no judgment. I'm not saying this stuff is right or wrong, but it does affect children. It does affect the next generation, right? So just another quote about from the Urban Institute's report is that the persistently poor children are 13% less likely to complete high school, 43% less likely to complete college than those who are poor, but not persistently poor as children. Now, again, I think I mentioned this during the interview with Hazel, was that a lot of people who kind of escape these types of neighborhoods or break out of that cycle of poverty, they at some point see education as the way out. And so for Hazel, it was having mentors really encourage her to graduate high school. It was even getting into college and graduating. And so as there are more educational resources, even books, podcasts, all those things, it's almost like opening this door, opening your mind to different possibilities in terms of, oh, like I don't constantly have to live in this fight or flight mode. There are ways that I can build resources and education and skills to be able to earn more money and hopefully break out of that cycle, right? And ultimately, really the biggest point I think in my conversation with Hazel is that there's this constant balance between personal agency and your environment. So there can be a lot of luck involved, right? So with Hazel, it was her parents continually giving her love and telling her that she's worth a lot. There is a really wonderful book called Hillbilly Elegy. I'll link to that in the show notes. And what really struck me about this story is about a gentleman, I think, who's living in the Appalachian Mountains and ended up going to an Ivy League college and being really successful in terms of career-wise. And one of the things that really struck me about that book was he had mentioned his grandmother really believing in him and stressing the importance of education and getting him to study. And so it's these adult figures in someone's life, right? It could be a mentor, it could be a parent, it could be a grandparent, really, really believing in the potential, even when someone couldn't see it in themselves. And so if you're in a situation where you really want to get out, you are living paycheck to paycheck, whatever it is, there can be a way to find these people, these resources, where they can be really, really invested in your potential. There are people out there who really want to see others succeed. I mean, that's why there's so many people that want to mentor, right? There's some people that are donating to these causes, people who are working like at ground zero for some of these NGOs and organizations because they really, really are invested in the well-being of other people. So it can start with going to social media, like Hazel said, reading books and just opening your mind to the possibilities of other things. And then when you can get the education or when you can get some of these users and use the skills, right? It becomes this now continual cycle, so to speak, of just educating yourself, taking action, seizing opportunities, you know, the more that really, really comes to you. I really, really hope you enjoyed this episode. I definitely got a lot out of it. I am very inspired by the way that Hazel is very humble and still really hustles to get, you know, all the money and all the kind of life things that she really wants, and at the same time give back to women and girls and hoping to help them break the cycle. So again, I highly recommend you check her book and her website. If you enjoy this episode, please share it with a friend. It will really help spread the mission of what we're doing here at Beyond the Dollar, which is to have more deep and honest conversations about how money affects your well-being. All right, everyone, until next time, keep living beyond the dollar. Next time on Beyond the Dollar.
I think a lot of people don't recognize their privilege of where they are, who they are, their race, their class, their gender. At that time when I had drained all my savings, I was just listening to a couple of folks, and I love them very much so, but when they told me that they were just spending their credit cards, maxed out their credit cards, doing whatever they needed to do to make money, that's when I realized, like, oh, these are not the people I'm supposed to follow.